and gentlemen, shall we call those that are outside, Honorable Wang, bring them in so that we can start the meeting. I think we should start. Let's start by making some introductions and thereafter go straight into the business of the day. My name is Fred Corner. I'm the chairperson of this portfolio committee. I must apologize for coming late because buses were stuck in the traffic on the way here. I'm sure some of the members are not here as yet. They might still be on their way. Next to me is...
Good morning, honorable members and colleagues. My name is Anna Boss. I'm the committee secretary.
Good morning. I'm Faith Bikani, a member of the committee.
On these mics. In the press again, Honorable Wang.
Tony Wang, member of this committee.
Andrew Schmidt, member of this committee.
Committee researcher.
Good morning, I'm Krizia Lewis. I'm assisting the work of the committee.
Which among you from them are here?
Morning, Yolis Orlando Communications.
Good morning, Fuga Kyoto Business Day.
Morning, I'm Sally Ankoma, intern and PMG.
Morning, General Commissioner from the regulator.
Morning, Irene Chifura from the regulator.
Morning, Simon Skosana from the regulator.
Good morning, Susisa Manlazi from the regulator.
Thank you very much. Can we test this one if it's working? Thank you. person. Okay. I think whilst he's still sorting out the mics, because we have lost a considerable time already, let's deal with some of the housekeeping matters. One being that we had scheduled a meeting next week on Wednesday, and according to the chair of chairs, the speaker has agreed to a request by the minister in the presidency, national planning, to address the portfolio committees on the 21st of November, which is a Wednesday, on the outcomes of the census 2011. So we are requested, therefore, to postpone our meetings and unless a special permit has been granted. In this case, there's no special permit granted to us, so our meeting will stand postponed next Wednesday. And then we'll meet the Wednesday thereafter. Okay. I don't think we should discuss this because it's a directive that comes from the leadership of Parliament. Members, then we are informed that towards the end of November we have 2 weeks of committee stroke oversight, and I think we need to then undertake oversight, especially to provinces that we've never been to. In our program, we've never been to the Eastern Cape. There are mines there that are taking place, both underground mines as well as quarries. Secondly, we have not been to Western Cape in terms of the sand mines and open cast mining that is taking place, including your Dewok, where PPC is manufacturing cement using the lime. So we would then need to take a week or so in the oversight. So we'll go to Eastern Cape so that by early next year we finish off with Western Cape and then we know that we've covered the entirety of the country. In some areas we've gone more than once. Reason very straightforward being that there's more activity that has been taking place in those areas. So we will then be scheduling an oversight in the week of the 25-26 of November to Eastern Cape. We're going to identify couple of mines and open cast mines and look at the location of those areas within close proximity of one another, we will then be in a position to then visit those areas. So we might not have another meeting, but we might have the oversight on that week. But we will see in terms of the applications that we are going to put through. With an understanding that next week we won't have a meeting at all on Wednesday because of the National Planning Ministry that is going to be visiting all of us. If there's no comment on that, let's then move on and allow the regulator to speak to us. I trust that the outstanding reports are now ready. Is that true? Both of them. But they are not yet circulated. Okay. All right. Over to you, regulator. Take us through.
Okay. Thank you, Chairperson. Honorable members, thank you for giving us this opportunity to present our annual report. First, I have to apologize for the CEO who could not be here. He is on a trip to Zimbabwe with the minister. And also for the board members who could not be here. Our board has just been appointed last month, so they are yet to hold the first meeting. The structure of our presentation will be as outlined at the top there. We'll start with matters that were outstanding in the previous financial year. Then we will touch issues on our financial statements. Then we'll highlight our achievements in performance management and the challenges that the regulator is facing at the present moment. First, I have to say that this report covers the current financial year. We've looked at our policies and we've reviewed them to be in line with the PMFA requirement. And we've established a financial system and control to be correctly implemented in that regard. The previous year financial findings by the Auditor General, the first one was the procurement and contract management, where transaction between 10,000 to 500,000, we didn't follow the prescript of the National Treasury. That issue has been addressed 100%. At the present moment, we don't have any findings. The second finding is the same. Procurement of goods over the value of 500,000. Well, there were also a finding on that regard. In that regard, we've addressed the issue. There are no findings this year. The last finding was expenditure management, where the accounting authority did not take effective and appropriate steps to prevent irregular expenditures. This current year, we don't have any irregular expenditures. It was addressed 100%. Now, coming to our current financial report, we got an unqualified opinion from the Auditor General. The only emphasis of matter that were found by the Auditor General is the restatement of financial result, and that were correctly stated, and action was taken to rectify the situation. Coming to performance management, we performed, I'd say, fairly well in that regard, in that there were no material findings concerning the usefulness and the reliability of information. Actually, our performance was around 78%. We've achieved most of our credit limit objectives. Coming to the financial statement, we budgeted 68.6 million via the Department of Mineral Resources. However, the National Treasury allocated us 39.4 million, which left the regulator with a shortfall of 29 million. So we had to budget and classify funds and adjust them accordingly. In order to enable the regulator to respond to its mandate, we have to obtain a permission from the National Treasury to utilize some of the surplus that we are having at our disposal to cover for the shortfall. And the National Treasury approved that application. Coming to revenue, our actual revenue was 47.4 million, which includes the transfer payment of 39.4 million, which is what we get from the National Treasury. The in-house income generated decreased by 0.1% to 7.9. That is, last day we had about 8.81 million as revenue. Our actual expenditures. The major contribution to our actual expenditures is compensation of employees, which takes 40.9 million, which is what we get from Treasury. And the other operational expenditures is about 15.6 million. And various expenditures in delivering our mandate was kept within the budget. We did not have a budget in this regard. If you compare the financial statement dating back from 2009 to 2012, we can see that our approved budget moved from 48 million to the current 68 million previous financial year. And the grant that was allocated to us by the National Treasury, in fact, decreased, actually decreased or almost remained the same for the past 3 years. So that's a big challenge. So our actual in-house revenue, you can also see that it's more or less the same, but it declined a little bit this year. And our expenditure, on the other hand, was increasing. So the deficit that you're seeing there of 12.9 million is as a result of the declining allocation from the National Treasury. Now, the trend on utilization of fund, as you can see from the statements from 2009, it was from 26 million moving up to 40 million. This is due to the headcount and also the expansion that we've committed to in the new building. We've moved from the old building, we've increased the viewing rooms, and also the organization structure had to be adjusted accordingly. And therefore, our operation expenses also had to increase. Our expenditure projected was 29 million, the actual that we used was 33 million, and the balance is 3.6 million. The reason for the balance is actually was as a result of non-cash transactions, such as depreciation and provision for leave. That created that variance. On revenue, the projected revenue was 32 million, and actually we accumulated 33 million, and the variance positive, and the most significant variance in that sense. Our achievements, coming to performance achievements, we are currently occupying a new building which has increased the space for our clients. The number of viewing rooms have been increased from 10 to 30. And we are facilitating tenders for all the producers. We can be able to cater for all producers at the same time. And previously it used to be a problem as the limited space, we could not accommodate all the producers. At the present moment, the service has improved. Generation of revenue, there were service charges that were in our regulation. As I mentioned in the first slide, we looked at our policies and look at our regulation to be in line with PMFA. Therefore, we have to reintroduce the levies, which were not the service charges, which were not charged before. We implemented that in May 2012, and we generated an amount of 10.4 million up to September, end of September this year. This will assist us in augmenting our deficit has the allocation. I've mentioned the allocation has remained the same for the past 3 years. So that will mitigate that shortfall. We are introducing the marketing for the polished diamond. As we are aware, at the present moment, we only deal with rough diamonds. We saw the need for marketing of our polished diamonds to assist, especially the small players who cannot be able to access the market. So consultation with the industry has taken place, and the interest was very encouraging, and people are prepared to participate in this process. And probably next year in the fourth quarter, we'll be able to take the first bunch of polished diamonds to assist the industry to market them in our premises. Continuing on engagement, the achievement, we have strengthened our relationship with the players, our clients, and the access to the CEO's office is now it's easy to be able to access the CEO and also to communicate whatever proposal that is suggested by the industry. Our organizational performance has also improved in this financial year, as we've seen our financials and also our performance. We hope that this year will improve from 78% higher than that. And the other thing I think to mention is that we've been operating with the acting CEO for the past almost a year. We had the acting CEO, and now the permanent CEO has been appointed in this position during the course of this year. So the CEO will be able to assist us even to strengthen our financial position further. Coming to inspections, we have improved tremendously on inspection. We are following up on compliance issues, and we are dealing with the industry, especially those that do not comply to the Act, and the response is very positive at the present moment. Our challenges, honorable members, as I've already said, the grant from the National Treasury has remained the same, and we have also been advised that it will even be cut further. In the coming 3 years, it will be cut by 1% and up to 2 to 3% if possible. So that's a big challenge for us. We have to survive, and the finances are very important for our survival. The funding, as I've already mentioned, has not increased. In fact, it's decreasing. These are internal issues that are a challenge to us. Externally, the industry itself has also its challenges. The emerging business have got a problem with funding. The banks are very reluctant or very scared to fund the small and emerging businesses. And although we can at times make RAF available to them, they find it difficult to purchase the RAF due to the funding problem. And also the other challenge for the small players, especially the South African players, the access to RAF is dominated by the financially strong buyers. In our tenders, when we present the RAF diamonds to our clients, the financially strong guys, they outbid them. So it becomes now a problem for them to access that RAF. Now, access to polish markets, when small guys buy and polish them, they find it difficult. As I've already mentioned, that we will try and assist them in accessing the market from the other players. They find it difficult to market their products due to limited market. So with the opening of the floor for polished stones, we hope that that last challenge will be addressed. I think that comes to the conclusion of our presentation. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Before we open the floor for the engagement with your presentation, we just want to allow the people from the sound systems to fix the mics, otherwise it's going to be difficult for members to speak. be true. So they must work under the table to ensure that these connections are talking to one another. Can we allow them that space, please? Thank you very much. That was quicker than I thought. Right. Honorable members, there you've got the presentation from the regulator giving you their operations, and let's engage. Any takers?
Accountability, you say, has been addressed. How was it addressed? That's the issue. Secondly, the issues relating to your duties, your inherent duties as a regulator. I've asked this question to the state diamond trader, and I still yet to receive an answer as to what is it that after the promulgation of the Second Amendment Act in 2005-2006, that we've gone from over 3,000 diamond cutters and polishers to about 500? And what is it from the regulator's point of view that has caused this, and how do we fix this? Because it is of no consequence, it is of no use to have a diamond regulator, a new dispensation. We have a reduction in diamond cutters and polishers. And the purpose of it is to transform. To transform the industry should mean that we have diamond cutters and polishers, more previously disadvantaged diamonds and cutters and polishers. Not less in total, but at least the same number of diamond and cutters and polishers in transformed industry. So what I'm asking is, have you and are you at all responsible for the reduction in the amount of diamond cutters and polishers? And what is it that you can assist to transform the industry, if that was your mandate and the reason for your existence in the first instance? Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Tito.
Thanks, Chair. I didn't hear anything about your workforce. Do you have, are you an employer? Well, there's no demand report. Also, there's a bursaries that you offer. Are you losing skills, or are you skilling people? Well, I don't hear anything about bursaries, like cutters and polishers. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Lorimer.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I'd like to know more about the service charges that you've introduced. What's been the reaction of industry to them? It seems like you're making good revenue from it. Will you make up your revenue shortfall in the current year? How many small beneficiaries are being assisted by your new business of marketing polished stones, and what is that effort costing you?
Thank you, Honorable Sunder.
First one would be an experience of being a regulator. This should be a new experience of venturing into this area. How do you find it? Have you found your feet in exercising your responsibility? That is one. The second one would be, you see it as a challenge that access to rough diamonds is dominated by financially strong buyers. How do you intend to address that challenge so that can enable the small and emerging buyers to access your rough diamonds? Thank you very much.
Thank you. Would you care to respond to those for now?
Thank you, Honorable Members. I've also got my team here, the CFO and the acting financial manager will also assist here. How the issues of findings were addressed? We had contracts that were running, currently running. Some of the contracts have to be terminated. Some of the contracts expired and were not renewed. Therefore, in that regard, we had to address that issue of those contracts that were entered into by the previous board. Therefore, that's how they were addressed. Now, most of the contracts that we have at the present moment are new contracts that were entered in terms of the National Treasury Regulation. So, all the contracts have been renewed. Some have expired, some have been entered into in a proper manner.
During the tender process,
etc. Tender process, procurement processes were followed. We even established the bid adjudication committee and also the bid evaluation committee, which looked at all these tenders and procurement processes, and they were approved accordingly. So proper procedures and processes were followed in renewing some of the contracts and also in advertising. New contracts were entered to, the old one expired, then we had to enter into new one, and that's how the matter was addressed. So we don't have any findings in that regard at the moment. That's how they are addressed. The questions were loaded. The question on the state diamond trader, the question on your reduction of the index. We are aware that before 2005 and 2006, the Beers were the biggest producer of diamond in the country. They produced more than 15 to 16 million during that time. And they had a number of site holders, cutters and polishers, and everybody had share in the production of those diamonds, had the access. So the diamonds were in abundance, or I'd say sufficient for everybody. Now the Beers, what they are producing now is less than 50% of what they produced some years ago. So now it means now the pool of diamonds that shrunk. Whatever that they have provided to the diamond trader, it has shrunk. So now there's a problem of access to rough. So in order to mitigate the situation, it means the country has got to import diamonds because we're producing less than what we used to produce. Therefore, that's why now the industry is squeezed. You cannot even, if you look at the belt themselves, they usually have about 15, 16 sideholders. Now it has even shrunk to 10 because of the limited amount of goods that are produced. I think it's more about the supply than another thing. And also, due to the recession that started in 2008, some of the companies to scale down on production and therefore less diamonds were produced. Therefore, the industry obviously is going to suffer in the end. There is no need to have a lot of cutters and polishers when they cannot be able to access the raw. I think that's our biggest challenge.
In terms of caritage?
In terms of caritage, from last year, I think it was about, say, 9 million carats. In total, when you say it depends on everybody, it's not 9 million. So you can imagine it's moving from 15 million 5 years ago to 9 million. It is even going to drop further. There is that possibility to drop further. So the industry is also going to respond accordingly due to the pressure of the producers. So the solution to the problem lies with the producer. If the producer can ramp up their production, then it means more diamond available and more cutters and polishers will be able to access. I think that's where they come.
$15 million.
A drop now to, if you can look at the report now, it's about 9 million. So that's a tremendous drop. Even say last year compared to this year is also even going to be lesser than last year. So we can see that the production is shrinking. So it's not a matter of that the state demonstrated our, even the state demonstrated itself has got limited access to the production because if there's less goods available, 10% of less is also going to be less. I think that's where the challenge is. Now, in that regard, it means the industry cannot be easily transformed because of the shrinkage. I think the more the expansion, the better. That's why we say now, the financially strong guys can be able to outbid them because there's limited goods and then it push up the price, the demand. And that's why the smaller guys now cannot be able to outbid them. Coming to honorable members at Dinto, the workforce, our workforce, I think it moved from 50 to about 100 at the present moment. We include also the interns. We take out students that have completed at college, whether it's jeweler or cutting and polishing. We put them in our program for training and for the period of the year. And once they have completed the period of the year, some of them they can be able to be absorbed by the interns. Bursaries are only offered for the employees of the regulator. We don't have a bursary for outsiders. The outsiders, we only help them to acquire the skills in-house training. We don't give out bursaries. Losing of skills, we are not losing skills in our regulator, but the skill is being lost in the industry. As I've mentioned, that due to the shortage of rough in the industry, some of the guys are falling, they're closing their offices because they cannot be, their offices because they cannot be able to operate because of the short of supply. Therefore, I agree with you. In that case, the industry has lost a lot of skills because now they move to other areas because they cannot survive. The cutters and polishers especially are the most affected rather than the industry. Honourable Member, Mr. Lorimer, the service charges. The service charges, at the present moment, it does cover our operational expenses. And we hope that we are going to survive with the international services. Now, coming to the Polish flow, the industry, we don't want to charge the industry because we want to encourage beneficiation. We are talking with the industry that they can bring their goods to us for free. I think the only expense that they'll have to cover is insurance. But some of the guys are prepared to pay us a fee, but they say, look, we want to encourage this industry. We are prepared to do it for free, but only if their goods are insured. We can also insure our site. So if that goes well, I think the industry will then benefit because we want to do it for free. We don't want to charge them any. And if, even in that regard, when it comes to service fees, polish goods are exempted. We only charge service fees on raft diamond. All the polish goods are exempted from the service fee. We only charge per transaction, say maybe $50-$70, which is very minimal. Raft, we charge a certain percentage of the fee. So we encourage beneficiation. So we don't want to discourage people from polishing. So if the industry can move towards polishing, for us it will be a plus, because then we will be getting our services for free. But well, as I already said, the challenge is if National Treasury is not increasing the allocation, it means that the revenue from service charges, as the industry increases beneficiation, it will shrink, because we depend on rust.
Another thing that we also want to add, honourable member, is that when we reintroduce the service fees as the regulator, the board mandated the management to engage the major stakeholders in this regard. And they came on board on a round table to agree that yes, this is regulated and it will also, it is in line with the regulation going forward as well. It's not a matter of saying that it was imposed on them. We gave them time to look at it and come up with the way on how we're going to introduce it. As you can see, the initial phase was supposed to be the 1st of April for the current financial year. However, looking at the engagement level that we had, we decided to delay it and just take it from May as what was as approved going forward.
Thank you. Coming to Honourable Member Sonto, the audit report, I agree, is not clean. we strive for a clean audit. As you can see, we moved from 2008. We had a lot of findings, so we take them one at a time. And we hope that this financial year we are going to have a clean audit. Those issues will be addressed. Finding our feet, I'd say the regulator has found its feet. Because if you look at the traffic of people that are coming to the office, people are becoming aware that the regulator is there and the regulator is alive. We've held a number of workshops in almost 9 provinces, and the attendance was very good, and people now are aware that the regulator is there, alive, and it's operating. So we've found our feet. I'd say that with confidence that everybody now knows where the regulator is and what is the regulator all about.
Thank you. Honourable Member, the other thing that I just want to add, if you're looking at the matter of emphasis on our previous or the year under review, it's the reinstatement of errors or corresponding figures as such. We've got an accounting standard board which also review their standard going forward as time goes on. There's a CAP standard number 17 which talks about the plant, property and equipment which was reviewed, saying that, in short, if you've got the furniture that maybe the useful life was 5 years, but you're still using it and you want to extend it maybe for another 5 years, review that. So however, if you're looking at the depreciation prior to the review of that standard, it was saying 5 years. So we have to correct the depreciation going back in the other previous financial year. Hence, that had an impact on the current financial. So we had to do that, and the auditors acknowledge our correction of our financial statement, because we cannot open the old financial statement, but we have to correct it on the current year going forward. I'm putting this because it's a matter that we have to comply with the standards that are given, and should there be any changes against on those particular standards, we need to comply, but we cannot go back and open the financial statement that has been closed or approved or audited as such. Thank you.
Thank you,
sir.
Honourable Sonto. You talk about the access to RAF and also the financially strong guys that are outbidding the small guys. What we are planning at the present moment, we have approached a number of producers to allocate certain amounts of RAF to exclusively for the small guys, so that they can compete among themselves instead of rubbing their shoulders with bigger boys. And at the present moment, we're at the negotiation stage. We hope that if we can be able to secure certain amount of RAF specifically for the small guys and exclusive for them. We hope that this rubber of shoulders with the big boys can be addressed. And I think we rely more on, you know, on the producers and also the partnership with them. Then we can be able to address this problem, because our tender system at the moment is open. We don't want to discriminate, but we want to have a positive discrimination system. This is specifically for this criteria of operators. No bigger boys. Let them compete among themselves. We hope that it would address that issue. Honorable Member Chaps, I hope I've addressed most of the issues. I don't know whether there are any outstanding issues.
Chairperson, what I'm interested in, I just hope that I'm not repeating myself because I have to go out due to other disturbances. It's the issue of the introduction of the tariffs or the charges that you mentioned. How, I don't know if I should be asking by now as to what has been put in place to ensure that you are able to then benefit, looking at the fact that you're saying that you are actually looking at the budget increase. You said 1% per year. 1-3% per year, which might give you difficulties going forward. And also in terms of beneficiation within the country, what inroads have been made to ensure that there's improvement in that area? Because we know that not much is being done, especially with taxation of people who are taking these diamonds out of the country.
Thank you, Honorable Member. The service charges that we've introduced, they were there all the time, but I don't know for whatever reason why they were not implemented. When we look at the regulation, we found that the service charges that have to be imposed on RAF. And when we introduced them, I think there was not much complaint from the industry, especially, you know, those that are exporting diamonds, because we only deal with the RAF that is exported. We hope that the service fee will cover our shortfall. We think we will survive in this regard. Maybe I didn't get your question regarding the amount. The amount, I'd say, at the present moment, I think we are halfway through the year and we've accumulated now about, say, 10 million. We hope by the end of the year it will be around 20 million, which will cover our shortfall.
But then do you then out of that amount also still have to make an application to National Treasury to retain that amount, or what is going to happen? In other words, there's no law that stipulates for you to have more options so that you are able to sustain yourself on a continuous basis at this point in time.
Now, since we move from our premises to their premises, then that expense of insurance has reduced dramatically. We only charge them per hour in that regard. In that case, then they are saving a lot. In fact, that service for them, it's reducing cost of their operation. So they welcome it in that regard.
Honorable Schmidt, followed by Honorable Khululu.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The argument, I'm just trying to figure out. The argument concerning the availability of rum has always been not the availability of rum, but the affordability of rum, as I understand it. There's a mountain, I think you allude to it again. The big boys must, or small boys must compete with the big boys. So it's about money. It's not about it being there. It's there. And so it's a bit kind of an argument on a different footing. But I've always understood economics and business to be that the bigger boys are always looking for bigger amounts of goods, have more overhead, and their profit margins always be bigger than the smaller boys, because it's like Transnet taking over many of the mines of the Beers, because the Beers had this massive overhead, massive international company, and its margins in terms of mining a particular mine would not be suitable to it, so it sells it off to a smaller mining group who then can mine it profitably because its overhead structure is less. Now, what you're telling me is now the opposite of just what I've explained. So, I'm not sure I understand exactly what the problem is, because if one follows that Transact the Beers model, why is it that the smaller guys, for the same goods, remember the same diamond, his overheads are less, his profit margins will be bigger. Why is it, am I missing something in this equation? Because I'm still trying to find out why it is that the affordability of access to rum, not the access to rum, is a negative for the small guy rather than for the big guy. What am I missing?
Maybe what I can say is that the lesser the supply, the higher the demand, and the price will go up. This is what is happening at the present moment. The supply is limited, therefore it drives the price up. For the limited goods, you've got to be strong to be able to purchase, because limited goods, and the guys that are financially strong will purchase, they will outbid you. The prices of diamond are determined internationally. It's the same all over the world. But the other guys that are strong, they just put a little bit of markup just to outbid the guy. I don't know how they make money from this. That I don't understand. Maybe it's economic scale or other, but I think there's a way in which they make money. But for the small guys, you find it very difficult. The other thing for the small guys, if a small guy buys and polish, you must know that he has to go to the market out there. So the buyers will always take the biggest discount, because the small guy doesn't have a choice. It's either he gives us that price or he stays with the diamond, which is not good for his business. But the big guys have got market all over the world. They can buy at that high price. They know that they're going to get a good price from the polish market. So I think it's where the advantage is, the bigger guys. They know that they're going to make their money. But the small guys, he doesn't know where he's going to. That's why we've introduced this polish floor, so that at least they also get a chance to attract the whole
You see, my only problem is the following, that the bigger guys, and I'm asking, the bigger guys might have the advantage, because instead of polishing it a year at 40 carats, $40 a carat or whatever, they take it to India or they take it to wherever, where they polish it at whatever is 8 or 10 or $12 per carat. And under that scenario, the local cutter and polisher will never ever have a chance against the bigger guy, as you call it. Now it's a catch 22, because you can either say A, don't export, or B, you're exporting too many, or C, I'm not sure which of those possibilities are the current position, but it comes very close to how you perceive your role, because I honestly do think that whatever one says, that since 2005-2006, we're in a worse position. I put it to you, we're in a worse position. In fact, the reason why we are in a worse position is the following. The Beers always said, I take out all my carriages or whatever. I let the local guys buy. I take out take that stuff and I take it to DTC, I think it's called, in London. Whatever I take out, I bring back in terms of value back to South Africa for those guys in South Africa to cut. So you had 3,000 people, or diamonds cut, polished, who could cut because the stuff the beers brought back in value, although it might be less stone, was cuttable in South Africa at the value, at the cost. We've taken that whole system, done away with it in our wisdom. So no one is bringing back value diamonds because when you export, no, no obligation to bring back. So I'm asking, in the process, it seems to me that we've cut our nose to spite our face because there are no diamonds coming back like the beers did in terms of value for the global guys, even under reduced circumstances, to be able to have more supply. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Thank you very much, Chair. Let me thank also the presentation all from the German regulator. Mine actually is a clarity seeking question around the question of illegal diamonds. I just wanted to check because I know that they do come across these illegal diamonds. What do you do with those diamonds once you discover that there are diamonds that have been sold to you? Is the diamond inspectorate, is it the duty of the diamond inspectorate to look into to those kind of diamonds in the market? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Holland. The illegal diamond, possession of illegal diamond is illegal in the country. And the police are responsible for arresting the culprits in that regard. What normally happens is that the police are out there, they catch the people that are dealing with illegal diamonds. Those diamonds are brought to the regulator. I think in our report there is a table for all the provinces. Normally it's diamonds and also fakes. When the police bring to our regulator, we identify whether it's diamonds or fakes. We give that a value. We seal those diamonds and they are kept at the police station until the case is held at that particular police station. It's only then that the magistrate will take our evidence. Sometimes we send our government diamond evaluator to testify in the court. So what happens when there's a successful conviction? The diamonds stays with the police until the end of the year. At the end of the year, the police bring the diamonds to the tender house. Those diamonds are sold to the public, and the money is sent to the national treasury. I'd say last financial year, the amount of illegal diamonds that were confiscated were in the amount of about 20 million. All those diamonds were sold, and all the money went to national treasury. So it's police that are actually arresting the people. Our role there is to value the diamonds and also to assist them with the selling of the diamonds. The money comes to the state. That's how we deal with that issue.
Can we...
There's a list there.
Can we discuss the future outlook of state diamond trader in the face of the decision taken by De Beers that they would establish a similar vehicle in Botswana, and in fact it is in operation as we speak. What's your view as the regulator? Do you believe that the state diamond trader is not facing a stiff competition next door? Just across our borders, or do you believe that we have enough stones that could be handled through state diamond trader? That's the first question. The second question is, currently we get reports in the electronic media that some fact bordering on discriminatory practices against some countries, particularly from the African continent, and in favor of those that are well established in the industry. I don't know if you've been following that, but surely you should be, because your CEO is there. And that was confirmed also by the input made by the former president of this country. This is recent as last night, basically. So can you contextualize that for us? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. The role of a state armor trader, as I've already mentioned, the state armor trader is receiving less goods as compared to some previous sales. Therefore, I think they've got a very stiff competition, because if in Botswana the players want to operate the same model as the state armor trader, then it is easy for South African buyers just to cross the border and import from Botswana. I think that's a threat that we're going to face for the state armor trader. Is that the threat? At the present moment, I don't know. I cannot speak on behalf of the state armor trader, but I think it's one of the threats that we'll face in the future, that people will prefer to cross the border to Botswana to get goods into the country. There is a possibility. Coming to Zimbabwe, I think if you look at our annual report, the goods that were imported from Zimbabwe legally following the Kimberley process have increased. I think now Zimbabwe importing more than the EU. From Zimbabwe. I think it's 45, some percentage is higher. I think the diamonds in Zimbabwe, if the quality of diamonds in Zimbabwe improve, I think the shortage of supply can be mitigated. I think we've got a very good advantage if Zimbabwe goods improve in quality. Then we can be able to mitigate this shortfall in the country. I think the import that we got from Zimbabwe for the first time, it exceeded the EU countries. Coming to the discrimination and all the KPC issues, I'm not well vested, but as we are aware that Zimbabwe was put under pressure. We don't know the reason, but they were put under pressure not to export, but ultimately Zimbabwe survived and they can be able to export. And I think, as I already mentioned, that our trade with Zimbabwe has improved dramatically. And I think even future, if they bring good goods to the country, I think the country is going to benefit from that. They have just become our biggest trader. I've already mentioned that it's even bigger than Europe now. It means there is a possibility that it can even improve further. Therefore, in that case, I think the issue of state diamond trading, or the availability of diamonds, if good quality goods are imported from Zimbabwe, we can be able to sustain the industry.
Thank you very much. Unless there are further questions.
I'd just like your opinion on this report that $2 billion worth of diamonds in Zimbabwe were stolen by people. Do you think some of those diamonds were ones that came to South Africa?
The stuff that you see there, these are stats that is taken from our trade with Zimbabwe, with Kimberley process. We don't deal, as I've already said, we don't deal with the illegal goods. Those are dealt with the police. At our premises, the goods that come from Zimbabwe come with Kimberley process certification, authentic Kimberley process certification. We certify them and we make it a point that they come from Zimbabwe. The other goods that cross the border, that's a matter for the police. There is that possibility. I cannot deny that.
Mr. Chair, thanks. Just one more. We talked a lot about diamonds, but... I'd just like to ask a sort of broader question in terms of illegal mining. Some time ago, the then Commissioner of Police estimated that illegal mining costs South Africa $5 billion a year. Do you think that's an acceptable estimate? Is it possible to say? And as a kind of follow-up to that, we recently discussed some illegal mining that's going on the edge of Soweto, where it's possible for you and I to go in and buy a gram of gold for 370 rand. Why is that trade happening so open? I know it's the police's responsibility to stop it, but is it something that you bring to their notice on a continual basis?
we are in constant consultation with the police. In fact, we've got the task team that has been formed between police, FARS, FICA, and all those enforcement. Sir?
How often
is
that?
We meet once a month. We deal with these issues. The estimate that of 5 billion, I think it's not really diamond. Diamonds, the figure is lower than that. I think they were referring to gold. Platinum at the present moment, we're not sure, but gold, it is estimated because the illegal mining, as far as gold is concerned, it's on an escalating scale, you know. But the police are not folding their arms. We're working together with them to really cap this. I think there's another forum which I think the justice and I'm not sure about that committee of ministers that are dealing with security, that are dealing with that issue. The police are on top of that, those issues. Because it's their territory. We're assisting them. We assist them with information as far as, because most of the people that have been licensed by us, the refiners, are also playing a major role in buying all those. Therefore, we check their registers and some of the information that I don't want to talk about it. It's very top secret and confidential. Police deals with that kind of issues. That is dealt with at the Hawks level, intelligence. I think there's only one case that is remaining. I think that case was based on I think we had tender houses licenses where people can be able to go and buy diamonds. You know, tender houses, the law specifically says that the foreigners are not allowed to enter those tender houses. They can only come to our exchange centers. Because we need to license them as foreigners. The case was taken to court and that clause was regarded as unconstitutional. We've won the first case, we've won the Supreme Court case, and the case now needs to go to constitutional court or higher court than that. And the matter is still pending, it has not yet been decided. And we feel that we're going to win that case.
Thank you very much. I think that takes care of the questions and answers that you have given to the questions. Honorable members, can we then accept this annual report, which is our last annual report of the entities? Can I get a move by the second? Honorable Tindo moves, Honorable Hululu second. We thank you very much, regulator. Hey? Oh, okay. We thank you very much, regulator, and we hope to see you when you present your strategic plan early next year to see what is it that you are intending to do in the coming financial year. So, yes, thank you very much. Have a safe trip back to your office.
Thank you, Chairman. And honorable members, thank you for the encouraging debate that we had. I think it was fruitful, and we feel that we will address some of the issues, or we'll try at level best to come up with a better report. And thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you. All right.
Yeah.
visitor is about to leave, but good mind that has what here, but what mind you said to come visit us on the station woman because that is more than was pushing up. Honorable members, let's finish off. Regulator, you are invited to take grab a cup of tea, a coffee outside. Come on, let's see. Now, honorable members, there are a lot of sand and stone mines in the Eastern Cape, as well as coal. Now, it's a vast province. We would have to divide it. I just want your preference here. We would have to divide it into your former Transkei area. There are quite a lot of those operations that are taking place here. And your central Eastern Cape, like your Port Elizabeth, Utenik, and all those areas. Jameson in those areas. Now, we might want to take East London, Butterworth, Umtata, and then right through to the coal mines in Indwe. That's one set of belt. Otherwise, if we take the entire Eastern Cape at one shot, we won't be able at all, unless we want to just go and see and go out. If we are going to sit and have discussions like we normally do in oversight, then we will have to subdivide the Eastern Cape. Or we take Port Elizabeth, we take Uteneg, we take Jameson, those areas together. So what would be your preference? So that when we do the actual application, then we take that into account. Which areas would you want to visit? Honorable Gaile, Honorable Sondo. Other views?
Covered.
Okay. No, that's fine. We will take that into account. And selecting out of, you know, there's so many pages of operations that are going on there. In fact, it's how many pages? It's 12 pages of information in terms of companies and their areas and what they are mining. For instance, in Albany, they are mining kaolin, sand in human store, Utenich sand, Grafenet, clay, Port Elizabeth clay, and so forth. But when start from East London in terms of the open cast mining that is taking place, go through Butterworth, go through Tumtata, and then come around to Indwe. I'm sure there's about something like 3 mines at Indwe alone, coal mines. Some have just started. So we would have to then write to them. So this oversight would most probably take place at our last working week. I'm not sure these days, when is Parliament rising? Did they finally give you a date? Let's then allow the programming the committee to sit and give us an indication. Because if we're rising at the end of November, then it means we'll have to undertake this oversight in that last week of November. If we're rising towards the middle of December, then we can then take it. Let's look also at January, whether there are no there's no time period for oversight. They normally do have. Till when? 2 weeks. Yeah. So we'll decide what would be your preference. Would you want to go there before closure or immediately at the opening? Yes, Honourable Kulus.
Thank you very much, Chair. On that one, already myself, on the 26th of this month of November, we are going on an oversight with public enterprises already. So I don't know. I would prefer, personally, somewhere around December or January. Because I would love to be part of it, so I don't want to miss this. So now I had already committed with the other committee for the 26th up to the 29th. So please, can we shift it just a little bit so that it also accommodates me? Thank you.
Okay, Honorable Sondra.
Chairperson, I share the sentiment.
Mm.
that member. If we could just juggle it towards December. We're coming back when? 29th?
Yes, 29th.
Of this month. This is November.
Yeah. You mean with the other committee?
With the other committee.
Yeah, 26, 27, 28.
And how far is Jamestown from Indwe?
It's a bit far.
A bit far.
Yeah, it's a bit far. Jamestown would be closer to your Free State.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, Virginia area. Yeah. Why did you had an interest for us to visit Jamestown?
Chairperson, I'm wondering how are coal mines there. I don't know whether there are coal mines in Jamestown, but in the old past, there used to be coal mines there. I know in areas like Safer Cut, that mine closed down. It was just on the just between Moltino and Stekstrom. There was a coal mine there and it closed down.
There's nothing referring to Jamestown.
think let's plan accordingly. It would mean that the oversight would either be, I don't think that December will suit us very well. We're winding down by then. It might mean that we'll take it early January, in the first or second week of January. That's now working week of January. So that we come back here, look at outstanding reports, look at any other thing else, and then the following week we go on the oversight as it is planned in the what you call. So I think your request can be immediately granted given the circumstances that you have mentioned.
In that case, I would like to invite the committee, because you will be passing my house if you are from East London, Butterworth. I'm sure you will be Kunum Tata. Just come in and have a glass of water in my house.
By all means, we'll be driving, so we'll be thirsty. We'll be driving from East London, indeed. Remind us closer to the time as well.
So to remind me.
Yeah.
Slaughter a sheep.
I'm not going to slaughter a sheep.
Honorable Lucas has hosted us very well. Very well in case. No comparison. Honorable members, that brings the house to adjourn, and that there's tea, coffee outside, please, is paid for. Let us take it, and we'll meet you for us.
How are you? What's your name?
Salim.
Thank you.
Yeah.